throbbing inside his helmet. I should have seen it coming. If he can build the system with Netto, he won't need my financing. The son of a bitch can leave me out in the cold, after I gave him the fusion idea on a silver fucking platter. I don't think he'd do that, wouldn't he? Humphreys was becoming more enraged with every word. I bring the fusion project to him. I offer to fund the work, but instead he sneaks behind my back to try to raise funding from any other source he can find. And now he's got a way to build the fucking rocket without me altogether. He's trying to cut my balls off, but shut up, you stupid bitch. I don't care what you think. That prick bastard Randolph thinks he can screw me out of this. Well, he's got another thing coming. I'll break his back. I'll destroy the son of a bitch. Humphreys yanked the wire out of Pancho's helmet, then pulled the other end out of his own. He turned and strode back to the bus that had carried him out to the Ranger 9 site, practically boiling up a dust storm with his angry stomping. If he hadn't been in the heavy spacesuit, Pancho thought, he'd hop 2 meters off the ground with each step, probably fall flat on his face. She watched as he gestured furiously to the bus driver, then clambered aboard the tourist bus. The driver got in after him, closed the hatch, and started off for the garage back at Cellini. Pancho wondered if Humphreys would allow the driver to come back out and pick up the other tourists, or would he leave them stranded out there? Well, she thought, they can always squeeze onto the other buses. She decided there was nothing she could do about it, so she might as well enjoy what was left of her outing. As she walked off toward the wreckage of the tiny, primitive Ranger 9, though, she thought that she'd better tell Dan Randolph about this pretty damn quick. Humphreys was sore enough to commit murder, it seemed to her.
Space Station Nueva Venezuela.
It was almost like coming home for Dan. Nueva Venezuela had been one of the first big projects for the fledgling Astra Manufacturing Corporation, back in the days when Dan had moved his corporate headquarters from Texas to La Guaira and married the daughter of the future president of Venezuela. The space station had lasted much better than the marriage. Still, the station was old and scuffed up. As the transfer craft from Cellini made its approach, Dan saw that the metal skin of her outer hulls was dulled and pitted from long years of exposure to radiation and mite-sized meteoroids. Here and there, bright new sections showed where the maintenance crews were replacing the tired, eroded skin. A facelift, Dan thought, smiling. Well, she's old enough to need it. They're probably using Cermet panels instead of the aluminum we started with. Lighter, tougher, maybe even cheaper if you consider the length of time they'll last before they need replacing. Nueva Venezuela was built of a series of concentric rings nested within one another. The outermost ring spun at a rate that gave the occupants inside it a feeling of normal earthly gravity. The two other rings were placed where they would simulate Mars's 1/3 G and the moon's 1/6. The docking port at the station's center was effectively at zero gravity. The tech guys called it microgravity, but Dan always thought of it as zero G. A great place to make love, Dan remembered. Then he chuckled to himself. Once you get over the heaves. Nearly everybody got nauseous their first few hours in weightlessness. Dan went through customs swiftly, allowing the inspector to rummage through his one travel bag while he tried to keep himself from making any sudden movements. He could feel his sinuses starting to puff up as the liquids in his body shifted in response to weightlessness. No post-nasal drips in zero G, Dan told himself. But you sure can get a beaut of a headache while the fluids build up in your sinuses before you adapt. The main thing was to make as few head motions as possible. Dan had seen people suddenly erupt with projectile vomiting from merely turning their heads or nodding. The inspector passed him easily enough, and Dan gratefully made his way along the tube corridor that led down to the lunar level wheel. He dumped his bag in the cubbyhole compartment he'd rented for this visit, then prowled along the sloping corridor that ran through the center of the wheel, checking the numbers on each door. Dr. Christine Cardenas' name was neatly printed on a piece of tape stuck above her door number. Dan rapped once and opened the door. It was a small office, hardly enough room for the desk and the two plain plastic chairs in front of it. A good-looking young woman sat at the desk, shoulder-length Sandy hair, cornflower blue eyes, broad swimmer's shoulders. She wore an unadorned jumpsuit of pastel yellow. Or maybe it had once been brighter, but had faded after many washings. "I'm looking for Dr. Cardenas," said Dan. "She's expecting me. I'm Dan Randolph." The young woman smiled up at him and extended her hand. "I'm Chris Cardenas." Dan blinked. "You're much too young to be the Dr. Cardenas." She laughed. Motioning Dan to one of the chairs in front of the desk, she said, "I assure you, Mr. Randolph, that I am indeed the Dr. Cardenas." Dan looked into those bright blue eyes. "You too, huh? Nanomachines." She pursed her lips, then admitted, "It was a temptation I couldn't resist. Besides, what better way to test what nanotechnology can do than to try it on yourself?" "Like Pasteur injecting himself with the polio vaccine," Dan said. She gave him a sidelong look. "Your grasp of the history of science is a bit off, but you've got the basic idea." Dan leaned back in the plastic chair. It creaked a little, but accommodated itself to his weight. "Maybe I ought to try them too," he said. "If you don't have any plans to return to Earth," Cardenas replied, with a sudden sharpness in her voice. Dan changed the subject. "I understand you're working with the Mars Exploration Program." She nodded. "Their budget's being slashed to the bone. Beyond the bone, actually. If we can't develop nanos to take over the life support functions at their bases, they'll have to close up shop and return to Earth."
"But if they use nanomachines, they won't be allowed to come back home."
"Only if they use nanomachines in their own bodies," Cardenas said, raising a finger to emphasize her point. "The IAA has graciously decided that they can be allowed to use nanotechnology to maintain and repair their equipment." Dan caught the sarcasm in her tone. "I'll bet the new morality was thrilled with that decision." "They don't run the entire show. At least not yet." Dan huffed. "Good reason to live off Earth. I've always said when the going gets tough, the tough get going."
"To where the going's easier," Cardenas finished for him. "Yes, I've heard that."
"I don't think I'd be able to live off Earth forever," Dan said. "I mean, well, that's home."
"Not for me," Cardenas snapped. "Not for half a dozen of the Martian explorers, either. They've accepted nanomachines. They have no intention of returning to Earth."
"Surprised," Dan said. "I didn't know that."
"There hasn't been much publicity about it. The new morality and their ilk have a pretty tight grip on the news media."
Dan studied her face for a long, silent moment. Dr. Cardenas was physically youthful, quite attractive, a Nobel laureate, the leader in her chosen field of study. Yet she seemed so bitter. "Well, anyway," he said, "I'm grateful that you've taken the time to see me. I know you're busy." He broke into a pleased smile. "Your message seemed kind of," she fished for a word, "mysterious. It made me wonder why you wanted to see me in person rather than by phone." Dan grinned back at her. "I've found that it's always easier to discuss matters face-to-face. Phones, mail, even VR meetings, they can't replace person-to-person contact." Cardenas's smile turned knowing. "It's more difficult for someone to say no to your face." "You got me," Dan replied, raising his hands in mock surrender. "I need your help, and I didn't want to tell you about it long distance." She seemed relax somewhat. Easing back in her chair, she asked, "So what's so important that you came up here to see me?"
"Down here. I came in from Cellini."
"What's your problem?" "I've been so wrapped up with this Mars work that I haven't been keeping up with current events."
Dan took in a breath, then started, "You know I'm the head of Astra Manufacturing."
Cardenas nodded. "I've got a small team ready to build a prototype fusion rocket using nanomachines.